This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.
If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Call in now with your gardening questions. 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. Now, here are your Garden Talk hosts, Ken, David, Mark, and George.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. We'll be talking to you for the next hour or so about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Everybody survived that once every three or four decade storm that we had?
It's a twister.
We didn't get as much rain as I thought we were going to get, but we did get the winds that they talked about, at least up in Poway.
Yes, we did. It was windy. When I got home yesterday, there was debris all over the yard. It had been windy there.
I don't think it was that windy at my house.
We had a large number of our trees that were in pots still were tipped over everywhere. Plus the nursery, well, obviously, but I'm talking at the house, a lot of things were knocked over.
Yeah, there was stuff that was tipped over at the nursery.
So I convinced you it was windy?
Yeah. Well, at some
point.
To recognize the wind.
Yeah.
It was nice. It was a nice break from the week before.
Yeah. It was a good rain, and it wasn't, a cold rain, so you could be outside working.
They did get 5 inches of rain up at the top of Laguna, and there's still more coming.
And look at it. What was it? 109 mile an hour gust at Cuyamaca. That's blowing.
That's a breeze.
Yeah, that's a bit of a breeze.
We did not get much rain in the southern half of the county, probably about a quarter of an inch. So it hasn't done anything to really stop water needs other than delay them a little bit.
Right. Well, Melanie was nice enough to send me a picture of the sprinklers going off in the yard while it was raining yesterday.
just to remind me, rub it in. Yeah.
Don't forget to turn those off. So
that was kind of her.
That's right. Yes. Do we have a law or a rule? If we have a quarter of an inch of rain, the sprinklers have to be shut off for 48 hours or something like that. Isn't there?
That sounds familiar, but I don't remember. I should have just. The timer that I've got for the sprinklers had a rain sensor that came with it. Of course, I didn't hook it up. It probably should have. It would have solved that problem.
Well, typically it's not a problem.
Well, usually not. Yeah. So.
We were having coffee yesterday out on the porch as it was kind of misting, and one of the sprinklers went off. And I said, I think I'm going to turn these off, betting that it's going to rain a bit. And so we did turn them all off yesterday.
Did it rain a bit?
It rained a bit. Not, again, like you said, not enough to really... It's going to delay the watering.
Yeah. I have seen reports that we got about a half an inch in Scripps Ranch. I have not gone out and checked my rain gauge, which is probably full of junk anyway. It's been so long.
It's highly variable, the rain amounts. And we're expecting more today. It is muggy out there. It was sprinkling, big drops, very few of them, but big drops all the way here from East County.
It was very light sprinkles on the way over from Scripps this morning, to the point where I really didn't even need to use the windshield wipers.
I didn't either.
Yeah, it's not.
It was just blowing across the windshield and disappearing up and over my head.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
But we are expecting some. I have never seen them say this before, but torrential downpours in limited areas today, where the thunderstorms pass over. Well, it means it's going to be brief. They used to call it brief heavy rain.
Oh,
but this is going to be. A
modern terminology.
Dun dun dun. Yeah, torrential downpour. Huh. It's kind of neat. In my limited lifetime, I've lived through the worries of global cooling, global warming, and now climate change.
And torrential downpours
that can cause small streams.
You're resilient.
Flooding.
You're still here.
I am still here.
Yep. Better than ever.
For better, for worse.
I remember the first. El Nino event that I lived through, I think, was in 1978 when the river flooded basically from from side to side. I mean, it was a big flood. Nobody cared.
Cleaned out the river valley.
It was a problem, but it wasn't. It was a problem.
It was not the end of times.
It wasn't the end of days. So it was just so. And I guess to look back on it, we were lucky that the Marina Boulevard Bridge didn't wash out like it did back in, was it 1916 or something like that?
I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah. The river took the bridge out.
Oh, wow.
I thought they built them better back then.
Apparently not. at least not that one.
Yeah, torrential downpours. So,
anyway, we've got classes this weekend, George.
Today, September 10th. In San Diego, we have San Diego Attracting Pollinators with Ryan, and at 9:30 in Poway, Design of a Functional Food Forest with Tyler Trimble.
What do we have coming up next week?
Next week in San Diego, Bridgette from San Diego Seed Company at 9 o'clock will be doing a class on seed starting.
Is she still a big deal?
She's a very big deal. I think she's improving. She's above
Now she's just a big deal?
She is a big deal.
Okay.
And actually, she's going to do one in Poway in February for us. And at 9:30, Winter Rose Care with David and myself.
Wow. That's us.
That would be us. Yeah. So in case you didn't have that on your calendar, you might want to mark that down.
Just the two of us?
That's next Saturday.
You and I?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to mark that down. I do have a calendar.
Yeah. That's probably not a bad idea for you to make a note of that.
Yeah.
To make sure you don't take the
day I usually go to work on Saturday, so I'm going to be there. I just need a reminder, and if George is going to be there to remind me, I don't really need to know, right?
We're a team. We'll make it work.
Yeah.
Let's see. The San Diego Botanical Garden Foundation calendar has some stuff going on. Today and tomorrow, the Ira Society is having their rhizome sale in Balboa Park at the Casa del Prado. So if you want to get some iris rhizomes, that's probably not a bad place.
Would you like to hear the updated Walter Anderson Nursery iris rhizome situation?
Let me get through with this first.
Oh, okay.
And then the 16th through the 18th, the San Diego Bonsai Club is having a show and sale. That should be pretty, I would imagine that would be pretty interesting too. the 22nd through the 24th, the Master Gardener Seminar is going on in Balboa Park. And it's not just the seminar, but also the plant sale. You're not doing anything this year with Master Gardeners, are you?
That was a spring thing when we did it last time.
Yeah. No, we're not slated to do anything at this time, at this juncture.
Well, I hope that's not an indication of anything.
Well, they like to rotate their speakers, Mr. Anderson.
We had a good run. We had 2 years in a row.
Yeah,
even
their most popular. Or second most popular. They like to rotate them.
And then September 30th through October 2nd, the Begonia Society is having their show and sale in Balboa Park. That, I think, would be...
It is. That would be cool.
Begonias are pretty...
It's a big family.
It's a big family, and there's some really cool stuff.
Absolutely.
In the Begonia family.
I agree. I totally agree. No, the... Some of the cane begonias, the uprights are spectacular. Some of the rhizomaceous ones that spread. It is a spectacular family in both flower and foliage. Leaf,
We had some recently that were fragrant, and I was unaware that a lot of the flowers.
I did not know that.
Adds to the mystique and the spectacularity.
Ooh. Wow. Well done. Well played, sir.
Of the begonias.
Yeah, and you know what? I think in the springtime, you can still go to Widener's and dig your own begonias.
What was it? It was last year. What's Widener's, the gentleman that calls for us?
Oliver.
Oliver called here, was talking about it. So Capri and I went up there, and we did dig a couple. And they're still in pots on the front porch blooming right now.
Which means they're alive.
Way to go. Doing well.
You know, tuberous begonias used to be
much
more popular than they are now. But the flowers on them are
spectacular.
Just amazing. They're huge.
A couple of things have changed over the years, and one is people used to look at a little tuber and think, I can go home and grow that.
Right.
And they would do it. And in addition to people want the instant
gratification, yes.
And to that end, growers are growing them now. And so you can get them potted and in bloom, which has happened with so many different plants and bulbs that we used to only sell as starts tubers. Yeah. And now, I mean, look at the dahlias.
Yeah.
We get spectacular potted dahlias where we used to sell 40 or 50 different individual varieties as tubers.
Yeah.
And now we have the plants. And so
this is a reoccurring theme. We've talked about this before.
Yes.
I think there's just a lack of patience. No one wants to sit and wait for that to grow.
Agreed. It's all Costco's fault.
Well, you know, speaking of dahlias, though, one thing that I just haven't been paying attention, but I don't remember seeing them that often, is bedding dahlias. And I can't remember the name of them. We used to sell them in
Rigoletto.
Rigoletto's. Yeah. I don't.
They're still out there.
They're just not.
They've lost favor.
They are not. When you put them next to a 6-inch pot that is 1 foot tall and 1 foot wide with a dozen blooms that are twice the size or three times the size of a Rigoletto, they kind of fall by the wayside. They're still there and they're still very nice.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat little seasonal plant, but they're
the old gray mare just ain't what she used to be.
Just not as popular as they used to be. But you know, when you go out and look in the bedding plant department, as far as blooming plants is concerned, there's just not as much as there used to be, or the popularity of it is changing, and maybe people just are getting tired of going out and switching stuff out seasonally, but you just don't see as much as you used to.
Well, there are a greater variety of perennials available now.
Mm-hmm.
Things that we used to have a variety of, now there's 10 or 15 or 20 because of all the breeding that's going on. And those varieties are so much more prevalent now. And you can get a quart of this or that, or a gallon of this or that, that takes the place of all the bedding stuff, and it takes us back to not wanting to wait.
Yeah.
Not wanting to get the six pack. I mean, think about how many fewer six packs we have out there, varieties and things, and how much more time and energy goes into the quarts or the gallons now that never used to.
Yeah, that's true. It's been interesting to see how things have changed.
Evolved.
Yeah. Well, salvia.
So the only thing that's constant is change.
Is change.
Yeah.
We sound like a bunch of old guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Salvias are a prime example of that. I mean, it used to be that we only had one or two varieties of salvias. Now we have tables of different varieties of salvias, which are actually pretty amazing plants. I mean, they're really pretty. Most of them are relatively drought tolerant once they're established, and they give you great color. And they also bring a lot of butterflies and hummingbirds.
They're pollinator friendly.
So you're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. You were going to give us a bulb update before I cut you off.
Well, since you were talking about bearded iris and telling people to go to Balboa Park to buy them.
No, I just said that I said iris in general. I didn't say bearded iris.
But. Oh, okay. I guess I hear what I want to hear.
Exactly.
Forget about the rest. So we were going to get, I think, a couple of dozen varieties of bearded iris.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they were supposed to arrive, I heard nothing. And then they said, you're only going to get about a dozen varieties of bearded iris. And then I got a hold of somebody, and now next week we're expecting 30 varieties of bearded
That's
iris.
That's a lot.
So he said, just let me know which ones you want to replace. The ones that they had zeroed, they were going to replace them with different varieties. And I said, well, I ordered a batch of every variety you had on your list.
Right.
And so there shouldn't be any substitutions if something's not there. They have a bigger list that they pulled from.
Oh, but so, they didn't tell us.
They didn't tell us. Oh. But now all is right in the world, and we're expecting 30 varieties of bearded iris next week. So for next weekend, they're going to ship them on Monday so they don't sit anywhere in the hot and the humidity.
Oh, well, maybe I'll have to get some and leave them in the garage to...
Yeah, to
dry
turn
out.
Dry
out.
To dissipate to nothing.
to turn into a petrified.
Exactly.
So now, David, you just said they're going to send them so that they don't sit in the heat. Aren't we expecting a little bit of a cold or a little cooler?
No. We're not expecting cooler. However.
Unseasonable.
But I was just looking at the forecast for this week. It's still weekend. It's still supposed to be in the 80s and upper 80s. But next week, the wind is going to change. And we should get a cooler, drier flow.
Well, isn't next week the day after tomorrow?
Yes, it is.
That's where I was going with that. When he said ship Monday because of the heat, and I was thinking next week it's going to be cooler. But
the cooler right now,
it's still warm. It's still going to be warm, but much cooler than where we've been.
Yes. Agreed. Accepted. Believed.
Acknowledged.
That's what I was going to say. Plus, we have the whole bulb thing from multiple sources has been a mess this year, and
I wonder what is that a supply chain issue? Do you think? Or?
I think it is a supplier incompetence issue, but I am not certain of that. But it doesn't sound like it's supply chain. It sounds like it's just
them.
Them. Thank you. I was going to say something I didn't want to say, so them is better.
No, you were trying to say something that you wanted to say, but you didn't want to say it out loud.
Well, I didn't want to say it out loud in the manner it was forming in my head.
Got it.
So, yes. And, you know, once in a while I do think before I speak. Not often, but today I want it marked on the calendar that I did think.
Put it in your calendar,
before I spoke.
Who managed to get fertilizer out before the rain came this event?
I intentionally did not put out fertilizer because this was going to be a significant rain event, which could have caused
a runoff,
which would have been bad. However,
you wish you would have.
I wish I would have, because we
didn't get near
the rain.
Because it was just a slow,
and I was
kind of a
little,
slow soaking.
I was a little upset with myself on Wednesday evening. I turned on my sprinklers under the avocado tree because it had been so hot, but I just wanted to do it a little bit because we're going to get this rain this weekend, and I
left them on
for a little bit longer than I intended to.
Yeah.
So they got
that
a full watering.
That happens.
And we didn't get the rain, so it all worked out.
Yeah. That happens when I fill my pool sometimes,
it's
too.
The truth.
Just forget to turn it off. I did not put any fertilizer out this time.
Did you?
I should have.
I fertilized our butterfly garden at the nursery.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. That was perfect. And I was going to tell you, there are so many butterflies in our butterfly garden, and every morning when I come into work, they're all out there flittering around as a butterfly will do, and it's doing its job. Oh, which reminds me, I have a job to do today.
I might remind you about that later.
What's that?
Work.
Yeah.
Work related.
Just work stuff.
Okay. All right.
Mark, did you feed? Fertilize. Did you fertilize anything?
Oh, no. No, I did not.
Okay. Did you think about it?
No.
Okay, so it was not a conscious decision to or not.
Correct. It was
a default. Okay, just checking.
And I went down the same road you did, David. I was going to, but I didn't know how much rain we were going to get. I didn't want to waste it.
Well, and had we, even though yesterday we did not get significant rainfall, today
the torrential
downpour could be over your house and could still wash the fertilizer away.
Right.
We'll monitor it.
I think that's a good idea.
Backyard storm watch. 2022.
Get your helmet and your binoculars.
My yellow slicker.
I was looking through, what is the name of this magazine? Trade magazine. Garden Center magazine. and they had the Retailer's Choice Awards for some different plants. And there was a Monstera in here. Monstera.
I thought you were going to say monsoon.
No. Monstera obliqua. Have you heard of that?
I don't know.
It's one of the ones. It's one of the ones that has the holes in the foliage.
Oh, okay.
Fenestration, I guess it is.
Don't most of them have that in some way? The Monsteras?
Well, I guess I guess most of the Monsteras do.
When was the first time you heard that word?
What?
Fenestration.
Oh, a long time ago. Varicia fenestralis.
George? Mark?
I couldn't tell you when.
Yeah, I don't know.
The kids, our coworkers at the nursery, use that all the time. That was the first time I'd heard that. You mean the holes in the leaves? Yes.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be holes in the leaves. Like Varicia fenestralis, which is a bromeliad, it's the markings on the foliage. Supposedly look like windows.
Well, then what the heck are fenestrations? Just markings?
Or holes.
Markings or holes.
Fenestration is a reference to a window. So, anyway.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please continue.
Okay, so anyway, the Monstera obliqua. So the plant often features 90% of the leaf is the holes. So only 10% of the leaf is the actual leaf. 90% of it is the holes.
Well, I've always tried to get rid of rose slug on roses. And if you don't, you just have 90% fenestrations on your rose leaves.
Yeah, but people don't like that on roses. They like it on Monsteras, but they don't like it on roses.
If we called it special and charged extra for it, it might just work.
That might work. One of the other ones that was interesting was...
If I could, fenestration specifically speaks to holes or splits, not any variation in color.
Well, that's interesting then.
It comes from Latin, and it means... provided with openings.
Oh, see, I always thought everything I had read before was it was a reference to windows, which I guess a window is
openings. So yeah. That would make sense, but not Microsoft Windows.
So whenever the Lord closes a door, he always opens a window.
There we go.
A fenestration. He provides a fenestration.
And they believe that part of it is for the larger plants or plants that grew in tropical areas. It would help cut down on the damage from the wind blowing through and whacking them all over the place.
That makes sense.
And that would make sense, especially in those large Monstera leaves.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
That's why they put the holes in the tarps on the fences, right?
And maybe they took that design from nature.
Sure they did.
They saw that with plants.
I am so glad we had this conversation today. I learned something today.
Finally.
Whether I retain it until tomorrow will be a whole other topic.
I'll query you on Wednesday.
Okay.
Another interesting plant that I have not seen it yet, although it apparently is in production, is Delphinium Red Lark, and it's a coral red delphinium.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
It would, it's kind of a neat looking plant, which, you know, that's another plant that you just don't see that has kind of dropped in popularity, which is kind of strange because it
beautiful.
When we were, they're beautiful. We were talking about perennials,
right? I mean,
they'll come back year after year, and they have spectacular flowers on them.
They really do.
But nobody's really finished growing them like they used to. Who did we used to get those from? We used to get blooming delphiniums in. They had like 3 or 4 foot tall.
I remember them, but I don't remember who we got them from.
I can't remember who we got them from either. But we used to sell quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty popular plant, and you had to be really careful because if you weren't paying attention when you're loading it in a customer's car, you break the darn stock off.
So true.
Yeah.
But it's a perennial. It can cut it back in the ground and it'll multiply.
It'll come back. Although it does say that the red lark delphinium is sterile, so it will not
seed.
It will not reseed itself. And you know, looking at house plants. When we were talking about the Monsteras, I mean, the popularity of aeroids now is just insane.
That's the right word.
The varieties, the dollar amounts that people are getting for these things.
Right.
It's crazy. It's like the new tulips. Yeah.
Well, I think
the tulip bubble.
I believe the bubble is
going to burst?
Well, if it's not bursting, at least it's been sitting up in the air so long that it's starting to shrink.
Starting to slow down.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had said you'd seen people were starting to sell off their off their collections.
A lot of people seem to be doing that, and they're saying they don't want to take care of them anymore and blah, blah, blah. It just sounds like people want to, they're starting to get out the door.
So, Ken, you said aroid.
Mm-hmm.
What is that for the uninitiated out
well,
there?
Well, no, you didn't look it up?
Oh, no, I know what it is.
Oh, well.
But I want to know if, you know, we throw it out. So those are like Pothos, Monstera.
Pothos, Monsteras.
Philodendrons.
Arum family.
Members. Yeah.
And so when we were in Hawaii a couple months ago, we were talking about this. You see these giant pothos leaves and
they're huge,
climbing all the way up into coconut trees.
Yeah, yeah, they're huge. I remember the first time I went to Hawaii, I was, you know, everybody's got pothos plants in their house, but they have the little, you know, 3-inch leaves on them, and you go over to Hawaii and they're
gigantic,
massive.
Yeah,
the dinner plate size foliage, grown all over the place.
In the wild or in nature, they grow as a bottom canopy plant, and they're because they do well in our houses. The reason they do well in the houses is they are typically in this understory place, and they're well adapted to low light, and that's why they work so well as a house plant.
Do you know where I remember seeing them in Kauai? On the road to the end of the road where you could take that trail when I was there.
Oh, the trail that we couldn't hike because we didn't get a pass that time.
I'm here for you. You have to have what is that? What is the trail? You have to have a permit now to hike the.
I forgot the name of the trail.
Nepali Kapali.
It's on the Nepali coast, but in the past you could hike it, and then when we got there, you had to have a pass, and we didn't know that, so we went online to get a pass, and it was 3 to 4 weeks out before we could get a
really?
Pass.
Really? Yep. Wow.
It's very sad.
I think I vaguely remember. Well, I haven't been to Kauai since the. Mid-70s or late 70s, but I vaguely remember going and hiking some trail.
Well, there are lots
down
of hiking areas.
down to the beach below. But what I remember about that trail was the stench from the rotting guavas and the rotting screw pine fruit on the ground.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but I do remember that at the Tantalus Rainforest on Oahu.
Yeah, the screw pine.
Pandanus.
Yeah, they were everywhere. And I didn't think of them as a stench. Maybe it wasn't hot enough. I thought it was a sweet scent. It smelled nice.
Well, yeah. At the time, I didn't like guavas either. Now I would probably like it, but when I was there, it was a gross smell.
It was bad. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back. With more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ, I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Another interesting houseplant that I have never seen before, or at least that I don't recall, although it supposedly, according to the magazine, is very popular these days, is Hawaii palm.
It probably changed the name.
Could be. Brighamia insignis, which it's not even really a palm, but it says the Hawaiian palm. Can only be found in the wild on the Hawaiian island of Kauai. Did you see any when you were over there?
I'm not familiar with it.
But you should say yes, because you probably did see them.
There's
you
a just chance didn't. I saw it, Ken.
Maybe not. It has become nearly extinct, and despite the difficulties of natural cultivation in the wild, it can be commercially produced through seed and tissue culture. With proper care, Brighamia can produce yellow star-shaped flower that can last up to several weeks. The leaves will fall off once a year and will leave scarring on the trunk, which shows which shows the new growth. Okay, that doesn't make any sense. New canopy will soon start the bud. Palms are relatively easy to take care of. So it's kind of an interesting plant. But it's not something that I've ever seen before.
Oh, I was thinking it was a regular palm.
No, it's not a palm tree at all.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. It is kind of cool. And it has a kind of a, I was going to say a fat trunk.
So a caudiciform trunk?
No, but not quite.
It looks like a ponytail palm as far as the bottom goes.
Yes.
Correct?
Kind of, yeah. Kind of similar.
I got nothing. it is neat, and hopefully we'll see lots of those. Correct. That's part of the reason when we were talking about the different perennials that show up and disappear is the new tissue culture and the shipping of plugs, where you can get 60 plugs in this little tray.
In a tray.
And half a dozen of them fit in a box, and you can ship them around the world within a day or two or three. And it has significantly changed the face of what we get and when we get it and how long it takes, and not everything's grown from seed anymore. And we've gotten a lot of really neat things because of it.
Well, I remember back in the late 70s and early 80s, I think it was 1983, I went to a World Bromeliad Conference. It was in Corpus Christi of all places, but
you had any place in the world you could have this, and we're going to have it here
in Corpus Christi. But back then, it was before they had been able to really perfect tissue culturing of bromeliads. So the only way you could get them was by division or growing them from seed. Which growing them from seed is fine, but you couldn't guarantee that you were going to get the same cultivars out when you're growing them from seed, just because of the genetics. So consequently, some of the really cool bromeliads that were out there, I remember going through and looking at the stuff that was for sale at the conference, and some of them were horrendously expensive just because it was difficult to produce them.
Right.
I mean, you had to wait for the life cycle of the bromeliad to go through so that you could get the pups off of them.
Kind of like the staghorns. The only ones that are in significant supply are the ones that are tissue culturing, which was very few of them.
Yeah, and now they're widespread as far as availability is concerned. It's brought the price down on a lot of things.
Do you understand the tissue culture process well enough to give a very brief little... this is what they do?
No.
I do. Okay.
Yeah, I do not. I
watched them do it in Singapore at a botanical garden for orchids.
Mm-hmm.
Where it looked like a small aquarium, and they had all this liquid in there, and it was moving slowly where they were working with the tissue, these little slivers.
Yeah.
And then they were moving it into the next size. But I didn't get any opportunity to talk to anybody. I just witnessed it behind glass.
Yeah. It's like taking cuttings on a almost microscopic scale.
Right.
And there's the whole process behind it. It's pretty amazing. But the other thing that's interesting too is that same what I was talking about with bromeliads, that also holds true for a lot of orchids that they've been able to tissue culture. But there are some orchids, and I'm sure that there's other plants too, that you cannot tissue culture. And I would have to take a look and see, but I know for a long time, Paphiopedilums, lady slipper orchids, could not be tissue cultured. They had not been able to perfect that. That was a long time ago. I would have to look and see if that has changed at this point. But
we should touch base with Chuck McClung and ask him what he knows about
that's
that.
That's a good idea. See what he has to say. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. I have not heard of anything recently coming through as far as insect problems is concerned.
No, nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, the standard stuff. Yeah. We're seeing, at least on Lantana in Poway, a lot of lace bug and spider mites on Lantana.
I was talking to somebody just the other day about spider mites and how they've been a bit more of a problem this year than they have in the past.
I think so. And we got a text from a customer that had pictures of a guava tree that was not fruiting after many years, and the fruit was shriveling at a small size. And it looked like, from the pixelated photo, that there was a serious mite infestation, but we couldn't tell from the picture, so we asked them to bring in a physical piece. Right. But it looks like spider mites. And then the lace bug, I think that's only in the last, what, half a dozen years, maybe less? Lantana, when I was growing up, never had anything on it.
Except cold weather and...
The bacterial spot.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that I can remember.
But now now those lace bugs are all over them.
And I talked to a customer yesterday or the day before about citrus leaf miner, and she wanted something other than the Captain Jack's because that, air quotes, didn't work. And so we chatted a little bit more, and I think the didn't work was because she didn't see any new growth subsequent to the damage. So the Captain Jack's has done an excellent job where I've used it in stopping the damage immediately.
Right.
But if the plant is done with its growth then you're not going to see any change.
Right.
You're getting rid of what's there. And so she was going to go back and look at it more closely. But I have not had any complaints about Captain Jack's not working that are founded, I guess is the way.
Yeah, I typically tell folks when they use it that it's not a panacea. Yeah. It's a mitigating step. It's going to kill what's there, but it's not going to change the damage that you see in your leaves.
Correct. And you do have to keep up with it too, because like I sprayed my citrus early this season to prevent it, and it did.
Until I didn't
spray it again. A couple of the plants got some pretty good infestations on them.
So you're suggesting where they say use it once a month for up to six applications, that would be a good
direction. That's a good idea. Yes, that's when you follow the directions, it tends to work much better.
Sometimes
they work. Other directions, yes. Yeah.
The reason I was laughing when you said it's a mitigating factor is I was thinking somebody asked me what the phrase was that you used about biologics in the soil.
The microbial?
Microbial activity. That's what it is. Thank you.
I'm here to help.
We can continue now if you have any direction.
Well, yeah, you and I were talking about it yesterday. Just the whole landscape of insecticides
has changed
dramatically in the past 30 years. I mean, dramatically. I mean, the spectrum of stuff that's available.
The solid ortho wall.
Yeah.
When I started at Walter Anderson Nursery,
yes,
the ortho products.
Ortho was the number retail one, insecticide company. They made everything, that was back when it was owned by Chevron.
It was
Chevron
glass jars.
Brown glass jars, and then it switched over to brown plastic bottles, and as the
with the same red and yellow label.
The same red and yellow label.
Distinctive, yes.
And the instruction sheet that was folded up into a little stamp size thing.
You could never open it.
Put back.
Yeah, put back, exactly.
Ortho was the king, and then there was Cook, Lilly Miller, Chacon Chemical, and then you had a couple others with just some minor stuff thrown in there. So there was I don't remember who made Saigon, it was a miticide, but it was also a systemic.
True.
And there weren't very many systemics back then. There was Saigon and
Orthene,
which it under Orthene from Ortho, but also Isotox.
Right.
Which was
also
which was acephate and a miticide. I can't remember the miticide.
Well, Kelthane and Thiodan.
Yeah.
Or Thiodan, I think, was the miticide in Kelthane.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you had Spectracide, which was basically diazinon.
Right.
And then Dursban was still available.
Those were all the stinky methylcarbamates. Right. But then that, in my lifetime, got displaced, was displaced by Bayer.
Right.
The blue bottles. Mm-hmm. And everything was Bayer, and they had newer generation, less interactive with beneficials and with the environment. They would bind in the surface areas of the soil and not move through.
And they were just better all around as far as exposure to human beings was concerned as well.
Right.
And now that's being kind of pushed by the wayside by, I think, I would say three products. Horticultural oil, mm-hmm. neem oil, and like a soap. Well, there was something else.
Well, spinosad, too.
Well, and spinosad.
Or the microbials, like spinosad
BT.
And BT.
Yeah.
And that's what, and those are the least interactive with the environment. Yeah. And that's what seems to be moving the most now.
Yeah, it does. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. We were talking about insecticides and the changing
landscape.
The changing landscape of that. And Chuck texted you about Dexol.
Which was red label, right? White bottle, red label, black markings.
The name is vaguely familiar, but I'm
not
place
familiar
it.
With the product. What does it primarily kill or attack?
Well, that was the brand name.
Okay.
And I do remember back with Chacon Chemical, it had the little caricature of Dr. Chacon on the label.
No, but I never liked Chacon products because it sounded like somebody was cursing at me. In Spanish.
Oh.
it never made sense to me to be a brand name. And I never liked it because of that.
That's interesting.
That makes sense. I mean, there are brand names that you look at and you don't want to use or you wouldn't promote.
Well, I was telling David yesterday when we were discussing it, I think we used to have three different kinds of malathion on the on the shelf, where there was orthomalathion, which is the only malathion that's on the shelf
now,
today.
Yeah.
There was Cook malathion, and I think Chacon might have had malathion too.
They did too.
But we had all three. But I remember my grandfather preferred Cook malathion because it was not oil based. It did not have the emulsifiers that they used were water based, and it wouldn't. He was of the opinion that it was better to use Cook's malathion on things like ferns or tender plants because it's not oil based, so it's not going to burn them. But then we were talking about it yesterday, and I was thinking about it. Well, I don't know how much risk there was of burning, even if it was oil-based, because with malathion, you only use like one or two teaspoons per gallon of water.
Right,
it's a very, very small amount. And then I was talking with one of my neighbors on Thursday, and we were talking about toxicity of stuff. And we used to sell some really bad stuff. I mean, that's just what it was available back then.
Like what?
Well, nicotine sulfate is gone.
And I think the next highest one on the LD50 list or lowest one was the Saigon. I think it was Saigon was next.
Well, Chlordane was really bad. Chlordane was really bad too. And the other problem with Chlordane was it lasted forever. But that was one of the reasons why people liked it why it was popular, especially for termite control, is you could put a barrier down around your house and it would keep the termites away from the foundation of your house for years.
Correct.
But it was a really nasty product. I myself am not sad that it's not available anymore. It was just not a good thing. And then Durzban was the next one from Chlordane, and that got eliminated. And then after Durzban, it was Diazinon.
I had a woman call the Poway store, David, was that about 2 weeks ago, she had a Durzban question because she had some and the label fell off and she wanted to know what the proper mixing instructions
were. It hasn't been available for years.
So we had an interesting conversation.
It's been at least 20 years.
Yeah, the label fell off and I'm just wondering if you can look at one of yours and tell me what the mixing ratio would be. We don't carry that.
It's not available.
You know, some shampoos have malathion in it for lice. Very small.
Really?
Special lice treatments.
I haven't.
I did not know that either.
We avoided that parenting nirvana.
Thank God, yes.
Did you guys?
We never had a problem with it. Although I had heard one time that what you were supposed to do was rub mayonnaise into your kid's hair and then put a shower cap on them and leave it in overnight.
Isn't that a pretty label?
Oh my God. I guess the idea of the mayonnaise was there's so much oil in it that it suffocates them. And speaking makes of oil, we mentioned horticultural oil. That's pretty much my go-to. Well, either it depends on what it is. If it's a sucking insect, it's horticultural oil. If it's a chewing insect, it's spinosad.
And I have the spinosad. I just have never taken it off the shelf. Well, actually, I used a ready-to-use bottle on my new citrus, the sleeve pots, as that new growth came out. I waited until it really got infested with leaf miner before I went and got my neighbor's bottle of ready-to-use and took care of it. But it ceased immediately.
Yeah, it's been a really good product. But like I said, if it's not a chewing insect, you're really not going to get anywhere with it. It doesn't work for aphids, scale.
But it does work on mites, spider mites, which I don't understand.
They're rasping, so it's kind of a quasi chewing.
So I have
insect.
To be really
so
careful.
You've had success with it with mites.
Yes.
See, mites are one of the ones that I would usually recommend.
It was a long time ago. It was a long time ago before I became a fan of hort oil.
Yeah, horticultural oil is I think one of the great things about it is that they're not going to build up an immunity to it unless they could figure out how to live without breathing.
Yeah.
And it works well.
Yeah, it works extremely well. And you can apply it the day of harvest. You could go out and spray the tree, put your sprayer away, go back and start picking the fruit off.
Right.
And it makes everything look so clean and shiny.
It makes everything look very shiny. But when you're spraying, you need to make sure that you keep it mixed and agitated.
That is why David prefers the ready-to-spray bottle that you just hook up to the hose so you don't have to keep it.
That's the easiest
way. I am an adjutant, yes.
Or tater.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Almond. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody, and don't forget to turn your sprinklers off.
Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticulture news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew or want to learn more about the show, how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to askanexpert@walteranderson.com. That's askanexpert@walteranderson.com or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at this same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.
This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.